Kicks, this is Aton Thomas, and you're listening to WPFW Washington, your station for jazz and justice.
Good evening. It's just about 6 p.m. in the nation's capital. The name of the show is News Views. I'm Garland Nixon on every Friday from 6 to 7 p.m. here on WPFW 89.3 FM in Washington, D.C., your Pacifica affiliate. You can find me online. I got a YouTube show, Garland. Just look up Garland Nixon. Facebook, Garland Nixon. Instagram, Garland.Nixon. Follow me on Telegram at GarlandN, and of course my email address, GarlandN@gmail.com. And I'm going to actually have my email open if somebody wants to email in like a question or something, GarlandN, or a comment. I'd be happy to read it on air. GarlandN, my first letter and the first letter of my last name, @gmail.com. Plenty to talk about as always, but first a word from our dear brother, our resident Muslim scholar, Shahid Bolson.
It's really remarkable. Every crisis that America is facing now, crisis is the wrong word for it. The right word for it is consequences. They're not suffering any crises. They're suffering consequences, the consequences of their actions, the consequences of decades and decades of vicious, hostile, aggressive, predatory policies all around the world. I mean, look at what the so-called immigration crisis, migrant crisis in the United States, the same people who scream about so-called immigration problems at the border and who demonize people who are fleeing from violence and crime and poverty are the same ones who created the conditions that forced those people to flee in the first place. What's happening in Latin America, so-called Latin America, is a direct result of America's constant destabilization of that region. The U.S. government has been meddling and manipulating and brutalizing so-called Latin America and Latin American nations one by one for decades. And now they want to wash their hands of the consequences and call it a crisis. But we don't have to let them. We don't have to let them escape from the consequences and avoid responsibility for their actions. We don't have to let them. Not anymore. And that's what the Article 6 campaign is all about. I mean, let's break it down. When we're talking about the so-called migrant crisis. From the moment World War II ended, the United States has been looking south of the border in the Western Hemisphere, not to help, not to build, but to exploit, to control, to dominate. They didn't want independent nations in so-called Latin America, no. They wanted puppets. They wanted governments that would serve American corporate interests and bow to Washington's demands. So what did they do? They went into those countries with their CIA agents, their covert operations, and their dirty money, and they started to destabilize them one by one. They overthrew democratically elected leaders, democratically elected governments like in Guatemala, like in Chile. They backed brutal dictators and military juntas in places like El Salvador and Nicaragua. And when the people rose up, when the people tried to defend themselves and reclaim their rights, what did America do? Did they take the side of the people who were rebelling and revolting in the same way that the American Revolution was their own revolt against tyranny, so-called, according to the myths of American history? No. What they did was train and arm death squads to murder, torture, and terrorize anyone who dared to demand freedom and justice. The U.S. normalized violence, and they flooded that region with weapons, and they weakened state authority all across so-called Latin America, so that no legitimate power could ever stand up to the violence and corruption that they had sown, that America had sown. But it didn't stop there. No, they went further. During the so-called war on drugs, the U.S. government, through its CIA, got into bed with the very drug lords and cartels that they claimed to be fighting. They did more than just turn a blind eye to the drug trade. They allowed it to grow. They helped it grow, as long as it served their political purposes. In fact, they engineered the flow of drugs into American streets. They were more concerned about controlling so-called Latin America than saving lives, than saving even the lives of their own people. But why is that? Because the neighborhoods into which, in the United States, that they were pumping those drugs, that they were sending those drugs, The people in those communities are members of the global majority. They're people from Latin America, so-called. They're people from Africa. They're people from Asia. They're non-white, non-Christian people. They're people from colonized countries. And believe me, when they see you in their country, when they see you on the streets of Los Angeles, or they see you on the streets of New York, or they see you on the streets of Chicago, or Dallas, or Houston, or anywhere else, when they see you on the streets of their cities, they don't see you any differently than they would see you if you were on the streets of Rio de Janeiro, or on the streets of Cartagena, or on the streets of Mexico City, or anywhere else. They see you in their country the same way that they see you in your countries of origin. In other words, as not citizens, they see you as people who are eligible for colonization and brutality and imperialism. They look at the countries that you came from that way, and they look at you the same way when you come from those countries. And what has all this done? It has empowered the cartels. It has allowed these drug lords to become the new rulers of the streets, to operate above the law, because America weakened the very governments that should have been able to protect the people. The cartels now have the weapons that the U.S. flooded into the region, and they use them to terrorize communities, to extort, to kill, and to destroy. That's an American creation. And now the people are running. They're fleeing their homes because they can't live under the brutality of the cartels. They can't live under that any longer, could you? You know, there's these stories going around, supposedly, about Venezuelan gangs coming into Colorado and taking over apartment buildings. Obviously, all of that is exaggerated. But could anyone blame the people in those apartment buildings if they fled from those apartment buildings? If they ran away to some other neighborhood? When it happens to you, you understand it perfectly well. When it happens to you, it's a rational thing to do, to run away and to try to find safe haven somewhere else. But when these people, the people in so-called Latin America, run away from the violence and the chaos and the anarchy and the brutality that you created, that you brought into their neighborhoods, why, you're nothing but a gang that invaded their apartment complex. You're the same. And when they flee, you blame them. They're fleeing from the poverty that U.S. corporations helped to create. They're fleeing from the violence that U.S. policy normalized. And they're fleeing from the chaos that the U.S. government fed for decades. They're coming to the U.S. border not because they want to. Everyone would rather stay in their own home, but because they have no other choice. They're seeking refuge from the very system of exploitation that America set up in their countries for decades. And what does the U.S. do? They turn around and blame the victims. They militarize the border. They criminalize immigrants. They demonize the very people whose lives they helped to destroy. But let's be clear. This isn't a crisis, like I said. These are the consequences of America's actions. This wave of immigration, this violence at the border, is the result of the United States destabilizing so-called Latin America for generations. We need to stop looking at this as a so-called immigration problem. We need to see it as what it is. It's a humanitarian crisis caused by decades of American imperialism. The people fleeing to the United States are not criminals. They're survivors of a criminal system of oppression that was designed, funded, and maintained by the American government. So when they talk about building walls, when they talk about locking up families and children, when they talk about sending people back to the violence and poverty that they're escaping from, don't be fooled. This isn't about security. It's about America refusing to take responsibility for the destruction and the insecurity that they caused in Latin America. You have to stand up and call this out for what it is. You need to demand justice, not just for the immigrants at the border, but for the millions and millions of people in Latin America who have suffered under America's imperial boot for decades. Until the U.S. stops destabilizing nations, until they stop propping up corrupt regimes and training death squads, until they stop treating Latin America like their personal playground, or I should say their personal dungeon, well, this crisis will continue. And this is why we're calling for the expulsion of the United States from the United Nations, because it has been their domination of the United Nations that has enabled them to continue these vile, vicious, violent, brutal, oppressive practices throughout Latin America and throughout the rest of the world with impunity. It's only because they have put under their control the one mechanism, the one institution that has the power and has the mandate to hold them responsible and hold them accountable for their actions. It's only because they have put that mechanism and that instrument under their control that they have been able to terrorize the world with impunity. But like I said, there's no actual way for America to avoid responsibility. There's no actual way for them to avoid accountability. And there's no actual way for them to ever evade the consequences. The consequences will be visited upon you one way or another. We would like it to happen through legal mechanisms. But if you don't get America out of the UN and don't enable the institutions of international law to enforce international law and hold America legally accountable for their actions, well then, the consequences are going to be visited upon the United States in a manner similar to which their actions caused those consequences in the first place. And that's what you're seeing now.
The number's 202-588-0893, 202-588-0893. We got open lines. One of the things I'm talking about today is immigration, if you got some thoughts about that. And for this reason, what we don't in America, let me put it like this. In America, what we don't do is we don't talk about things in depth. We don't have an intellectual discussion about things. We talk about the final outcome. We don't talk about how things got there. You know, I knew someone who's an older man, his father had passed away. And when I got the story about it, family, wonderful family. I love him very well. Love him very much. But when I got the story, what I found out was that his father had passed away of a brain tumor. But somebody went and looked in his drawer, one of his drawers, when they were going through his drawers, and they found all this headache medicine, lots and lots of it. So what they surmised at some point, and everywhere they look in his car, what they surmised at some point was he'd had headaches for years, for a long, long time. And they thought about, and some of this stuff was old, and they realized something. This man had a brain tumor for years. He was treating the consequences of the tumor. He never addressed the tumor. He didn't get it checked out. I don't know, for all we know, maybe he did go to the doctor and he knew it, but the appearance was he had headaches and he took headache medicine to stop the headaches, but he never addressed the brain tumor and that took him out. So what am I saying? That when it comes to immigration, Trump wants to say we've got to close the border. Kamala Harris went to Guatemala or something and she said to the people, don't come. Well, you know, I would ask her to look up something called the El Mazote massacre. It was in Guatemala. The United States was behind it. The United States trained right-wing death squads. Why? Because we were overthrowing the government. We were doing what we did all the time in Latin America, installing right-wing death squads so we could rob the countries, so we could get their bananas, so we could get their oil, their lithium, their whatever it is. So, for years, we destabilized Guatemala. For years, we steal their stuff. We put in puppet governments that don't give a crap about the people. We destroy the lives of Guatemalans. And then when Guatemalans show up at the border, Kamala Harris goes to Guatemala and says, don't come. Imagine that. Don't come. Remember Nancy Reagan? Just say no. That's simple. Somebody grows up. I always say this. You know, I was in law enforcement. I've talked to a lot of people in jail, in prison, things like that, right? And I'll tell you this. You go to a jail and you start talking to people. You talk to people. You talk to a lot of people that's got criminal records, that's been involved in crime, and they're like, blah, blah, blah. And you talk to them, and you know what stories you'll get? The same one. Well, both of my parents were heroin addicts and I was on the street at a, you know, my parents was alcohol. I was beaten. I was abused. You cannot separate this person. You can say, oh, this person's a terrible, evil person. They've lived a life of crime. But you look at them, and if you understood their back, what would your life be back like if you were 8, 9, 10 years old trying to find something to eat because both of your parents was passed out because they were on heroin? Where would you end up? Maybe you'd end up in jail too. So what are you going to say to that child who had two heroin addict parents who ended up maybe with addiction problems, whatever their self? Just say no. The simplicity of this is preposterous and absurd. So what I'm saying is this, the border, going to Guatemala and telling them, just don't come. After the United States for generations have destroyed and destabilized their country. And now that they show up, now that the consequences of our actions in Guatemala show up on our border now. No, just don't come. We don't have a time machine. We can't go back and try to fix it now. And that is what I'm talking about. We're trying to address the consequences. We don't want to talk about how we got there, because then there is some level of accountability for what we did. Then we have to accept that we created that. We can't have that discussion in American politics. 202-588-0893. Number one, we got callers. Number one, we have a time delay. And just in case somebody curses on air so we can hit the button, right? We got a delay switch. So make sure you hold the phone to your ear while you're waiting for a call, because if you set the phone down and listen to the radio or listen to the computer or whatever, when I call for you and say you're on the air, you're not going to hear me for 10 seconds because of the delay. Number two, do not use a speakerphone. They sound terrible on the radio. And last but not least, keep the phone close to your mouth so we can hear you. 202-588-0893. Next caller, you're on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hello, Garland. This is Dave from Florida. How you doing today?
Wonderful. What's happening, Dave, from Florida?
I got a problem with a lot of you guys, right? You say we have a democracy. It is not a democracy. It's a demonocracy. It's run by a bunch of demons.
You got the wrong man, buddy. I say every week, this ain't no democracy. Oh, no. It's absurd to call this a democracy.
You don't call them demons, though. Okay, let's talk immigration real quick, because the European has the same problem that we do, and that is United States foreign policy.
Mm-hmm.
Right? All the people going up to Europe are going up from the Middle East because of the wars that we instigate.
Well, but let me add this, though. There is some history, too. For instance, I don't know how much you know about France's history. Why do you think there's a bunch of Algerians in France? You know what I mean? I mean, there is a history of colonialism, the Brits, etc. You had the Germans had a problem one time. A lot of people don't know that. Prior to World War II, there was a bit of a Holocaust where they killed a lot of black folks. But what happened is you got a lot of European countries, and they would have colonies all over the world. But the people in those colonies were actually considered subjects of the crown. And people Correct. From those countries would come back. So what you had was – but let me say this, and I'll get right back to you. The ruling elite want a whole bunch of poor people come to the country, because that dilutes the labor market and it makes them cheaper for them to pay workers.
You're right. I mean, the whole idea is to keep everybody as a slave, right? Yeah. The chains are now money, but you're still a slave.
Oh, yeah.
You can only go as far as them chains will let you go.
Well, you know what? It's like anything else. There's degrees of slavery. You know, I don't know if I've often talked about Harriet Beecher Stowe's book, Uncle Tom's Cabin, and that upset a lot of people in the North, and the Southerners got really mad, the slave owners. And they started getting books written and commissioning these books. One of them was called The Northern Planter's Bride. And what they did was, and it was legitimate, they attacked the owners of the big corporations in the North. And they said, oh, what about the factory towns? What about you got all these white people working up in the North, and they're working in factories. They're getting their heads cut off. It's dangerous. You're working child labor. You're doing terrible. Well, here's the truth. But they were both right. The Northerners that were saying slavery was wrong was correct. The Southerners that were saying, oh, yeah, look what you're doing to your white workers, were correct. It was the same thing. It was the ruling elite taking advantage of the working class. There was different degrees. Slavery is a much lower degree than what was happening in the old factory town. It was the same process of exploiting the working class, just different levels or degrees of exploiting the working class.
Now, I'm going to tell you something that really, really aggravates me. I got a couple of things on my mind, so I need to get them out. The first thing is black Americans make up about 18 to 20% of the population, maybe more, maybe less. I don't know the exact number.
It was 13, but that's not important. Go ahead.
Okay. The Zionists, i.e. the Jews, I don't think Jews are Zionists and Zionists.
No, a lot of Jewish people are not Zionists.
They're two different things. But in the United States, 2 to 3 population are Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
And those, and that 3% has a heck of a lot more to say about the 13 to 20%. They have a lot more pull.
Well, yeah, and what you say is interesting because there's a, I remember reading this study about which ethnic groups have the average wealth, you know, Japanese, Indian, whatchamacallit. So there are numerous ethnic groups that have different levels of wealth commensurate with their percentage of the people that they have. So yes, that is a, that's a long discussion. And see, it's another long discussion when you talk about Zionism versus Judaism for this reason. Joe Biden's a Zionist, an admitted Zionist. Ain't nothing Jewish about him, is it? All right, thanks a lot. Appreciate the call. All right, now get to my next caller. Go ahead, make it quick.
Everybody complains in America about the Israelis committing genocide.
Mm-hmm.
Who in the heck are we in America to complain about a genocide because we were founded on genocide?
There are those who say that we were founded on genocide and that this is the genocide that's going to end the U.S. as a world power. 202, thank you, 202-5880.
Hey,
all right, appreciate the call. 202-588-0893. Next caller, you are on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Taboo calling from Washington, D.C.
My main man, Taboo, what's happening?
Well, got a question for you, brother.
And I got an answer for you.
Yeah, good. Several questions, if I could. Do we, the American people, control our government?
No.
Are we supposed to?
Yes.
Then how do we correct the problem? I feel that was most helpful if we focused on that, because you're 1,000% right. How do we correct the problem?
I'll say one of the things I think that would help correct it, and that is, I think, in my opinion, I could be wrong, this is just my opinion, I think people supporting third parties, because I think that the two main parties are done. They are nothing but puppets of the ruling elite, and the only way to break that puppetry is alternative parties, is third parties. Well, you know, that's, so if you ask me, what do I think would work? I think that's something that would work, because the two parties are completely captured by corporate elites.
Well, Congress and the people who are controlling our government, are those illegal actions?
Well, you know, illegal how about this? Unconstitutional is what I'll say.
Well,
they are unconstitutional. Let's go with that. Okay.
You said they are unconstitutional?
I believe so.
Well, if so, whose duty is it to correct it?
That's a good question. It is, theoretically, it's ours, isn't it?
Hey, thank you. Yours and mine. So let us charge the people who are wrong. They are not above the law, or they are not above the Constitution, let's say.
I was about to say they are above the law, because they're the ones that institute. And you know what I mean? If you're the one in charge of who charges and arrests and puts people in jail, then you kind of really are above the law.
But we are the authority. It might be legal, but it's not legitimate. Legitimacy comes from the people.
Right.
So it is our duty. So let's, you and I, get together before this election happens and say what you've been doing is wrong, and we should demand, and the military is there for us to lock their butts up. They are not above the law. Above the Constitution.
You know, here's a problem, and let me get your thoughts on this, Taboo. You know, Malcolm X said, you know, basically you can't free a person until you wake them up, right? Person's got to be awake. As long as they're sleep, they can't do nothing. Americans are so propagandized. Americans, and you know, our black folks have so proper. Some of the things I've heard black folks say in this last election period, I just shook my head and say, you know, as Malcolm X said, when somebody tells you, I didn't leave nothing in Africa, he said, you left your mind in Africa, right? I hear people say things that I just shake my head and say, boy, you are so propagandized. So the problem we got, Taboo, is what happens when the ruling elite, what happens when the rulers propagandize to the people that they become guard dogs for their oppressors?
Well, it's the people who are aware. I hate to tell you, brother, but it's the people like you and I and those who are aware. You never get 100%. It's those who are aware that's going to have to carry the weight of the babies, the old folk, and the uninformed. It's no different than it has been. Freedom, those freedom fighters, those liberty fighters, we must go back. Who are we talk a lot about the sons of liberty. Everybody admires liberty, you know, but we don't talk about the fathers of liberty. Stono Rebellion, those black folk who were fighting for liberty first. You see, we are those freedom fighters, brother. We're going to have to carry it on, those of us who are aware.
You know, if you want to talk about the issue, you know, I love to read. I recommend a book written by Paul Robeson Jr. called A Black Way of Seeing, From Liberty to Freedom. Right. And he talks about the issue of liberty and freedom in the context of black folks. And he talks about black culture and basically talks about how black Americans, because of their unique history, actually have a view. He called a black way of seeing. In other words, people in black people who live in America, who grew up in America, et cetera, have an understanding and a vision of America that's very different from white people in America. I will add this. The discussion about Kamala Harris, is she black or is she white or is she this? Here's what I'm saying. She's not a black American. And so she doesn't have the way of seeing. Barack Obama wasn't. He doesn't have the way of viewing America that a black person who grew up in America would have, who grew up with the history of your parents are both black Americans and you hear the stories and you see what's that an experience, a different experience, right?
Well, yes. Well, let's clarify that a little bit.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, I got a couple callers. I hate to cut you off, but I'll give you one last statement, since you're such a loyal supporter of the show, and I appreciate it. One last statement, my friend.
Thank you for that. It was the Negro tribe. Blackness is a consciousness. We are from the Negro tribe. Black is a state of mind, a consciousness. Black consciousness was a response to the white consciousness of that, what they call white supremacy. But ain't nothing supreme about white. It was white domination. So let's call it what it is. They are not members of the American Negro tribe. Thank you.
Thank you. That's a way to put it, because there's a discussion, because let's face it, a person who's black and grew up in America who lived through, you know, the results of slavery in America, the legacy of slavery in America, is going to have a particular view of the world, a particular understanding of the world and of America and of their environment, right? A black person who grew up in Jamaica, a person who's Jamaican, who's Nigerian, who whatever the case, they're not going to have the same vision of America as a black person who grew up in America. Kamala Harris, Barack Obama, they're not going to have that vision, that view of America that I have, that you might have, a lot of other people. I'm not saying it's good, bad, or indifferent. I'm saying it's a different view. It's a different vision. And I'm telling you this, the ruling elite will allow Kamala Harris to be president. They will allow Barack Obama to be president, but they ain't going to allow Jesse Jackson to be president. They're not going to allow a person with a history coming from, slavery and the legacies of slavery. That's considered the peasant class. Kamala Harris, Barack Obama will be considered an immigrant. They will be considered an immigrant. 202-588-0893. Next call, you're on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Good evening. This is Jay-Z from Southeast.
Oh, great to hear from you, my friend. What I'm all ears.
Okay. So I want to talk about a potential solution to mitigate some of the worst aspects of this political structure. In fact, I sent this paper to you that I wrote about this, but out of all the times I sent you stuff, I've never got a response. But here's the issue. One of the things, people talk about the Electoral College. In Nebraska, the two states in this country currently, Maine and Nebraska, that don't use winner-take-all mm-hmm. to allocate their electors, okay? In Nebraska, the Republicans tried to turn that state into a winner-take-all, and other Republicans says no, it's too close to the election, because they distribute the electors on a non-winner-take-all basis. So I wrote a paper called The Case for Proportional Allocation of Presidential Electors. What should happen, if this was anywhere close to a true democracy, what should happen with the electors is that you get a state, the electors, under my proposal, would be allocated based on the proportional allocation of the popular vote. So if a candidate, so if you have 10 electors in your state, if you have 10 electors in your state, then 1/10 of the popular vote would gain a candidate one elector. So if you had 1 million people, and whoever gets, and 10% of 1 million is 100,000, so whoever gets 100,000 gets an elector, because that's representative of the people's will to vote for that person. Now, I just saw an article that talked about the so-called 7 swing states. There are 6 or 7 candidates on the ballot in those states. You know, not only Jill Stein, you have Cornel West, you have the Libertarian, and so forth. But there's six or seven of them. They're not on all the state ballots, but they're there, and nobody has heard about them because the news media, including this station, doesn't talk about the people who are on the ballot.
Mm-hmm.
But if we had proportional allocation,
mm-hmm.
that means that in a state like California, which has 55 electors, and 55, 1/55 is 1.87%. So whatever candidates get 1.87% of the popular vote gets an elector. And I've done in my paper, I go back to 1992 and show what the distribution would have been under those elections. And in an election where Jill Stein and Gary Johnson ran as the Libertarian Party, they would have got five electors. In 92, when Ross Perot ran, he would have gotten something like 29 electors.
Let me ask you a question. I do have a question about that, and we only go a little bit long because I got some more callers. But one other question I have about that: since you have to have 200 and a total of 271 electors for the Electoral College to win, mm-hmm. then what I'm hearing to me is we would always end up with a circumstance where nobody gets 271, which means it goes to the House of Representatives, and the House of Representatives would now choose the president. Do you see that as a problem?
No, because that's what the Constitution, that's what the Constitution actually permits. And not only permits, they expect it. The 12th Amendment created the House. So it is not just the first two people, it's the first three people who go to the House if no one gets to.
But let me ask you this. Mm-hmm. If we're looking for representation, if we're looking for a government, and I'm not saying this is an answer or even to say you're wrong. If we're looking for and when people say democracy, people say, is it a democracy or a republic? When we say democracy, the ideal that we're using, we're talking about, is a government that actually represents the masses, not a government that represents the rich few. That's what we really want. I don't care what you call it. But if you set up a situation where the House of Representatives every 4 years picks the president, isn't that kind of the opposite of getting representation for the people?
No, because you're not dealing with reality. We don't have representation.
Oh no, I agree with you. No, that is reality. I agree.
So the first thing you do, you don't go to the worst case scenario. You go to, okay, is this system better? Of course it's better. This is the problem, in fact, with the left. If it isn't ideologically perfect, then they don't want to do it.
I didn't say I did or didn't want to do it. My actual question is this.
Yes, it works.
Since right now we end up with some schmuck that's owned by the corporations every 4 years, and they play some team sports with the red team and the blue team, and both of them think their guy or girl is better, and we get the same thing over and over. If we do that, see, what I'm looking for is a better circumstance. I don't want to end up in the same place. So if we do that, and in every 4 years, the House of Representatives selects somebody because we don't have 271 electoral votes, do we end up right back where we are now, where the ruling elite get some schmuck every 4 years, and we end up in the same place? And I think that's a reasonable question.
It is a reasonable question, but the context of it, you're not presenting fully. You have to say, look, like if the person has cancer and you're worrying about, and they're going to die, and you're worrying about radiation killing them before that, well, they're going to die anyway. So you either do something or they're going to die anyway. So what I'm saying, and you have to read the paper, because I mm-hmm. deal with all the different.
No, I understand what you're saying. Okay. I'm familiar with the process.
But the point I'm trying to make is, if Harris and Trump split, say Harris gets 47% and Trump gets 46% in North Carolina,
mm-hmm.
but whoever gets one person more, they don't even have to get a majority of the votes. They just got to get one person more plurality than somebody else, and they get all the electors. That's not democratic.
Right.
It does not in any way reflect the will of the people in those states. So the first thing you have to do is say the system has to represent the will of the people.
That's yeah, exactly. That's what I'm getting at. That's the goal. Let me ask you one other question. We're going to have to go, but I got another question. In the process that you are advocating for, right, let's say these two people get they both run and both of them got, you know, they're both of them just need, say, I got five electoral votes. And both of those candidates, they need those five to win. Could I then negotiate and say, well, I'll tell you what, Harris or Trump, whoever, you know, just whatever your name is, candidate X.
Yeah.
I'll give you my five. But in order for to do that, you have to do this, this. Let's say
exactly.
I want health care for people or whatever,
exactly.
that I could then negotiate with whoever's going to become president and get something in return for that.
And I write about that in the paper.
Well, you know what? Well, we got to run, but I'm going to tell you.
But I like the direction you got.
Sorry, but I got a bunch of other callers. I really appreciate the call. But I got other callers I have to get to. Thank you very much. That was a great call. 202-588-0893. We got open lines. Next caller, you're on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
This is T-Bird from Upper Marlboro.
Talk to me, my friend.
I was wondering what you thought about this thing in New York City where the mayor was indicted. And I was wondering also how it might affect your belief that one red-faced politician is getting a raw deal. Because if he was black, if it was Obama who called a hit, you know, this head of state in another state like Georgia and said, can you find me something? Do you think that Obama would not have been impeached and kicked out? Just like with mayors, I think there's an astoundingly high number of black mayors who seem to be investigated with millions spent and a lot less guilty verdicts than you would expect.
Let me ask you this, because I am very, very cynical these days, right? And not that I was by any means any fan of Eric Adams by any stretch of the imagination. You talk about a puppet for the man. Here's my point. I tend to, when it's somebody like Eric Adams and they go after him, I tend to think he ain't do something they wanted. That they said, do what I want, and he said, oh, I can't. Now, let's not forget, a couple months back, when they were, there was all of these on campuses, they were, you know, marching against, protesting against what's going on in Gaza, right? And there was an article came out, I reported on it, where these billionaire Zionists, these super rich Zionists called Eric Adams, and people can search it online and find it. There was a WhatsApp messages where they were saying to him, we want you to use the New York City police to stop these protesters, you know, go in there and crack some heads. And apparently he didn't. He said no. You know what I think? You told him rich Zionists no?
He told our real rulers.
Yeah.
What?
Look it up. He said, nah, I'm not going to send the police in. Guess what?
Yep.
I bet the next person will do it, won't they? Or they'll go to jail.
Yeah, I believe you.
Let me give you an example. Right up from here in Baltimore, I can't think of her name. There was a woman who was the attorney general, right? If you remember during the Freddie Gray trial, she was the woman who went in and charged all these police officers that killed Freddie Gray, right? And she also said, you know what? She said the internal investigations division, which was supposed to be investigating these people, right, actually acted like their defense attorney. She told the truth. I'm a former cop. I'm going to tell you, I used to be in charge of the internal investigations division. She was telling the truth. They didn't do an internal investigation to find out what those guys did. They did an internal investigation so they could help them get off. And she said that. And what did they do? They charged her with all of these crimes. Marion Mosby, I think her name is. Marilyn Mosby. They charged her with a bunch of crimes. Why do you think they charged? You think they charged her with? You think if she tried to hold these officers accountable for killing Freddie Gray. She called out the police department for helping get these officers off. And what a mystery. She gets charged with all these crimes. Let me add this. One of the things they said was, well, you went to buy some land and some property. And on this property, you filled this and that out on your forms, and that was wrong, right? That means that for some reason, that when she went to buy property, the FBI said, you know what? Let's go take the paperwork and go over her paperwork and see if we can find something to charge her with. They picked her out and went after her because of the Freddie Gray. Marilyn Mosby, in my opinion, is a victim of the system.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. There is another case that should be in the court. We'll see if the number one prosecutor from California will go after them, because Blinken actually lied to Congress.
Yes, he did.
And he told them that there is no evidence that Israel was blocking aid, which would have stopped all the weapons from coming through.
Yep.
And let's see if she goes after him.
And let me add this. And his people had given him a report saying just that. Tony Blinken lied to Congress. How about
this?
Let me add this. James Clapper went to Congress. He was the head of the NSA. And they said, are you spying on Americans without a warrant? And he said, no. Congress found out that he was lying, and they said to him basically this: why'd you lie to Congress? You know what Clapper's answer was? This is what he said: it was the least untruthful thing I could say. In other words, yeah, I lied to Congress. What you gonna do about it? You see, if you and me go to lie to Congress, we go to jail. If Tony Blinken or James Clapper or one of the people that work for this criminal enterprise, U.S. government, they can lie, they can break any kind of crime, they can do anything they want because they run it. But you better not steal a candy bar from 7-Eleven or you gonna get your chair, brother.
And then the people who were lied to gave 55 ovations to the guy doing the genocide.
How about that? Wow. Oh, no, they only gave one ovation. The whole time was an ovation. They just sat down every now and then while they were doing the ovation. They took a rest every now and then, probably because their hands was burning.
Oh, well, their hands are coated with money, so I shouldn't be burning that bad. Anyway, thank you.
Thanks. 202-588-0893. Next call, you're on air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Tony McGee, in between Daytona and Cincinnati, Ohio.
In between Daytona, man, you ever heard of the Bethune-Cookman Wildcats?
Nah.
Never mind.
I'm sitting here in the water, feel like you when you be on the water in your boat.
you know me well. What's happening?
I'd be wondering what you was thinking about that day when you took that shot, but I just had a quick question. Since last week, Taboo was saying the independence, declare independence, and the people need to take it back. Now, he said that they don't listen to us. My question is like this. A guy told me inside a truck stop, he said, the reason why they don't listen to you and they do this and they do that is because back in, let's say, 42 or 47, they had that NASA project, and the American people didn't want them to do it, and then they did it anyway. Something he was telling me, and he said that's the reason why they don't listen to us no more. And then they take all the money and do what they wanted to do and stuff. And then the other one was, I heard you today when talking about Kamala Harris. I heard her talk a couple of times too, and it seemed like she wanted to say maybe the truth, but then she doesn't say it. So I said, why she don't say it? What she really think? She's not school enough, or they don't want her to say it, or she might hurt something by saying something that ain't going to be true. I don't know, you know?
Yeah, I never met a politician that had a problem with lying. But who knows? Maybe there's one. Nah. All right, thanks a lot. 202-588-0893. Next caller, you're on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Earl calling from Southwest.
My main man, Earl. What's happening, my man?
Hey, good day to you. Just thinking about the question about what's looming with this strike that's coming up, potentially Monday with the longshoreman strike.
My dad was a longshoreman.
Oh, wow.
My dad, he worked at Dundalk Marine Terminal in Baltimore.
Okay. So I guess you know you're familiar with it.
No, I really be honest. I wish I did.
Oh, wow. Well, I believe they're supposed to be going on strike come Monday, and potential, the disruption in food or
Oh my goodness. When I was a kid, I remember my dad going on strike when I was a child. I remember that. He was in the ILA and all that. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That's who was in 333, ILA in Baltimore. That's who he was a member of and everything. But the whole East Coast supposed to be going on strike this potential coming this weekend.
Wow.
You know, and the disruption and, you know, along with all the other distractions that's going on, everybody paying attention to, you know, of course, the politics and Diddy situation. But this is, you know, it's potential to hit more severe and right in your, you know.
Look, if the longshoremen get on strike, they'll find out. When Americans don't, everything, all this stuff comes in by ship. The longshoremen go on strike, you will find out what time it is, won't they? You won't be able, you'll go to the store, hey, well, how come there's no bananas? Where can I get some advocate? Well, how's the story? Ain't no cars on the lot.
Hey, that's the Hindenburg. They talk about some inflation. that kind of thing.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you very much. Appreciate the call. All right. We got any more? Next caller, you're on the air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Baltimore.
Talk to me, my brother.
I had to call because you was talking about our prosecutor, but you was right on target. They couldn't stand her. They set her up.
Yep.
They set her up.
Yep. Absolutely.
And when you go up against the status quo, I don't care what position you hold, but there's a certain minority group of people in power that if you buck them, they'll set you up.
Oh, they'll crush you. From the very beginning, as soon as Marilyn Mosby said, she told the truth. She said, I'm just paraphrasing, but she said that the Baltimore City Police's internal investigations was acting like the defense, as part of the defense team for the officers that were accused of killing Freddie Gray. And she was right. And they didn't like that. And remember, before weed was legal, she said, I'm not going to arrest. She was in Baltimore with all the black folks. And she was saying, I'm not going to arrest and put these people in jail for weed. She went against the system. When you fight City Hall to go to make example, I feel that she is a political prisoner. She's a victim. Her and her husband both are victims of the system.
They set both of them up.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Tell me this. If they want you.
Yeah, that's the politics in Baltimore. It's been the politics in Baltimore for years. It's a certain minority interest group that they like a mafia.
I think they went. Let me tell you this. In my opinion, they went after Sheila Dixon, too.
Oh, no question.
They went after Sheila. They were like, oh, she had some gift certificates for $25. Man, them people be making hundreds of thousands of millions of dollars, and they're going to go after her for $25 gift certificates, and we ain't supposed to figure out that it was all a setup.
Well, what do you think about Donald Trump and the new charges that just was brought against him for what he said about the Haitians in Illinois?
My opinion is this. If Donald Trump wasn't running for president, they wouldn't go after him. I don't care like Donald Trump or not like Donald Trump. In my opinion, they're only charging Donald Trump. Look, in history, they never charged the president with anything, and they charged him with everything but exposing himself to a blind person. That's the only charge that they I don't care what you think of Donald Trump. I believe in justice. In my opinion, they're charging Donald Trump for the same reason they keep shooting at him every couple weeks, because they don't want him to be president. And that don't mean I like Donald Trump, but it's awful suspicious that every time you turn around, there's bullets flying around Donald Trump, and the Secret Service was asleep, okay? Donald Trump.
But one of the things I got to disagree with you a little bit about is that he do run his mouth too much.
But you ain't supposed to shoot you.
He says some awful things.
I'm not saying he don't, but I'm just saying it's running your mouth is not illegal. In the same way that it's not right,
when you say things that also can bring and put other people in danger and put their lives in danger, he ain't the only one.
Let me ask you this.
You know.
Let me ask you this.
It was wrong what he said.
Let me ask you this.
Absolutely wrong.
Let me ask you this. What about all of the people that said stuff about Trump? One guy literally said they should put a bullet in Trump. One lady cut a bloody head off and held it up at Trump. They are saying things about Trump that could possibly bring danger to him. Should they also be prosecuted?
But it's a different side of the situation.
I know it is.
I mean, he's running for the president. He should have be more astute than what he is.
I'm not saying that whether he is or ain't, he's Trump. We all know who Trump is. My point is this. They're not charging Donald Trump with anything because they want the law to be carried out. They're charging Trump because he's running for president and they want to take him out. It's a political hit job. It's a political hit job on Marilyn Mosby. It's a political hit job on Trump. Different people. I may like one and don't like the other. I don't agree with Trump. I don't agree with Kamala Harris. I'm a third party stuff. Much as I dislike both parties, dislike both parties, I'm a third party guy. I would not want to see Kamala Harris charged with a bunch of crimes just because somebody didn't want her to be president. I oppose that. I don't care who it is. I oppose it.
I hear what you're saying, but you know, he said he shouldn't have said what he said.
I'm a big First Amendment person. Because, I believe in free speech, brother.
He set people up in a way that they'll be harassed. So, Mom, you know how white folks are.
I'm still saying I don't think
they'll
he charged people with a crime for that.
Some of them could be physically attacked,
yep,
and all of that craziness because of something that he said and put other people's lives in danger. And I think that was wrong.
All right. Well, certainly appreciate the call. Thanks. We got any more? One more caller. You're on, next caller, you're on air. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
JD from D.C. As a matter of fact, as you mentioned, Marilyn Mosby, Garland, I want to thank you for all the platforms you do because I follow you on all of them.
Thank you.
Great job. But also, Sean Souter. The detective that was up there running with the gang,
they killed him.
And everything else. Exactly, bro. Oh, so you're already
he was supposed to testify against. They had like this gang group, but they were planting guns on people. They were stealing heroin. They were selling drugs. It was a criminal group within the Baltimore City Police. Sean Souter was a police officer. He was supposed to testify against them. He got a call. He went in an alley. He didn't come out the alley. He had a bullet put in him. I remember that. You know what time that was, don't you? You're supposed to testify against the police, and you get a bullet in you just before you're supposed to testify to police, and we ain't supposed to figure it out.
Right, and I'm here in D.C., and like I say, I'm out of it now, man, but I got a lot of stuff that I cannot talk about, you know, because ubi-de-quay, and I'm not going to, but guess what? That whole thing with and God bless Marilyn Mosby, man.
Yep.
You know, and I just want to point that out to you, man. You know, if people want to look it up, they can follow it online and figure it out. And also, man, thank you for all the things you do. You know, God bless you. God bless brother. What's his name over there, man? You know, doing this thing. Mm-hmm. You know, and like I say, man, you know, I love y'all, man.
Thank you. Before I go, let me read a quick article from Business Insider from January 13, 2014. An investigation by L Universal found that between the years of 2000 and 2012, the U.S. government had an arrangement with Mexico's Sinaloa drug cartel that allowed the organization to smuggle billions of dollars of drugs while Sinaloa provided information on rival cartels. Sinaloa, led by El Chapo Guzman, supplies 80% of the drugs entering the Chicago area and has a presence in cities across the U.S. There have long been allegations that Guzman, considered to be the world's most powerful drug trafficker, coordinates with American authorities. The L Universal investigation is the first to public court documents that include corroborating testimony from a DEA agent and a Justice Department official. The written statements were made to the U.S. District Court in Chicago in relation to the arrest of Jesus Vincent Zambada, the son of Sinaloa leader Ismael Zambada, and allegedly the Sinaloa cartel's logistical coordinator. Got a few more minutes, 2 minutes, I'll read it. So here's what he told the court. On March 17, 2009, I met for approximately 30 minutes in a hotel room in Mexican City with Vincent and two other individuals, DEA agent David Herrod and a cooperating source with whom I had worked since 2005. I did all of the talking on behalf of the DEA. A few hours later, Mexican Marines arrested Zambada on charges of trafficking more than $1 billion in cocaine and heroin. He says, bottom line is this. We don't have time. I'll read it for you later. 2010, 2012. You heard of El Chapo. If you read the article, it's in Business Insider. You can look it up. The name of the article is Confirmed. The DEA struck a deal with Mexico's most notorious drug cartel. So all that killing and shooting that was going on in Chicago over drugs, And they're like, look at Chicago. Those people are shooting itself up. The United States government struck a deal with El Chapo. Heroin, cocaine. What about all those people that were overdosed? What about all those families destroyed? People on crack, all this stuff. The United, and not now, is this, we talk about the 1980s. People heard about the 80s and Air America and the Nicaraguan Contras, how the CIA was running drugs in. But 2010, 2012, that wasn't that long ago. Let me ask you something. I don't know if you've been reading about Afghanistan. Did you know that the amount of heroin, the amount of poppy being grown in Afghanistan has dropped? Don't believe me? Search it yourself. Look it up online. 99%. It's dropped 99%. How long have we been gone? 2.5 years? So what you think? What you think it's a coincidence that the United States left and then all of the bad guys of the Taliban? They said all along, we don't want this heroin to be grown. We're Muslims. It's against our religion. The United States came in. Heroin production went through the roof. We left. It went down. You see, the drug war is a war on us. It's a war on the American people. Our criminal government literally brings drugs into our communities, and particularly into the cities, into the poor black people. Now we got white folks. You think that fentanyl that they're talking about, you think all these drugs coming across the border, you think if they're shipping in cocaine and heroin and making deals, you think they ain't doing it with fentanyl? You think they're not doing it with meth and all the other stuff? The war on drugs is a war on us. And then what do? They make a fortune off of it. Then they have private prisons. Then they put us in private prisons and they make another fortune. All right. Don't forget Garland Nixon on Facebook, Garland.Nixon on Instagram, at Garland N on Telegram. I got my YouTube channel. And last but not least, you can email me. It's my first name, Garland, and the first letter of my last name, GarlandN@gmail.com. I want to thank my main man, Kalia, for the job he does. You know I love my house music. Let's go.
Tandaza, yeah, yeah. Shabang bonile, isin tangi zetsile.